Golembieski versus Barnhart. How do you like that pronunciation?
Close.
Don't reinforce it.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Barry Schultz. I represent the plaintiff here this morning. Your honors, in the commissioner's brief, she combs through the record and finds evidence that, in her opinion or in her attorney's opinion, supports a finding that the plaintiff is not disabled. But the question before this court is not whether substantial evidence supports a finding that Mr. Golembieski was not disabled, but whether or not substantial evidence supports the administrative law judge's decision. And that's an important distinction because this court has held on many occasions that this court must review the record as analyzed and discussed by the administrative law judge, and that any evidence not relied on by the administrative law judge should not be used to affirm his decision. This case, I believe, should be governed by this court's holding in the Zarowski versus Halter case. In Zarowski, this court relied upon Social Security ruling 96-7P, which involves the analysis of credibility and of a claimant's symptoms. In this case, pain was the primary symptom that was testified to. This court held that where allegations of pain are not fully supported by the objective evidence, then the administrative law judge must investigate all avenues presented relating to pain, including a claimant's prior work record, observations by treating physicians, statements by third parties. The ALJ must consider the nature and intensity of the pain, the claimant's daily activities, the dosage and effectiveness of any pain medications, and any other treatment used for the relief of pain. The ALJ in this case did not discuss the plaintiff's daily activities at all in his decision. He did not discuss the medication that was prescribed by Mr. Golembieski, which included Dilaudid, Demerol, Vicodin, Paraconforte, Percocet, OxyContin, all medications that are used to treat severe pain.
What do you think he should say about him? What is he qualified to say?
He's required to discuss the fact that those, or to consider the fact, and the only way we know if he considered them is to discuss them, that if a plaintiff is prescribed significant pain medications, whether or not that in fact supports his credibility
as
he's testifying as to pain. That's correct. And one would think that where numerous pain medications have been tried and those medications have been changed, that that would support a favorable credibility determination. The plaintiff testified that his various medications cause severe side effects, including severe fatigue, slowed mental processing, and that the Dilaudid in particular caused an inability to function after he took it. The ALJ does not discuss the side effects of those medications. In addition, Mr. Golembieski testified that the only way that he could sit comfortably for any length of time was to use special spinal pillows. The ALJ does not mention that he used any or needed to use any special measures in order to sit comfortably. In addition, the evidence shows that the plaintiff underwent some extensive physical therapy, which did not relieve his symptoms. The ALJ does not mention the physical therapy in his decision. The ALJ doesn't mention any of the written statements by the third parties. The plaintiff's wife submitted a written statement indicating that she had quit her primary job in order to take care of her husband because of his illness, that she was then fired or quit several other jobs because she missed so much work, again, because of having to stay home to take care of her husband. The plaintiff's parents submitted written statements indicating that they worked a significant amount of hours each week in order to help Mr. Golembieski at his radiator shop because of the fact that he had so much trouble doing his job, had to go see the doctor so frequently, and was involved in therapy. The ALJ, although required to consider such third-party statements, he does not even make any comment addressing that evidence. In addition, there's a 32-page exhibit in the file from the Mayo Clinic, Exhibit 16F, which the ALJ completely ignores. Now, it's true that evidence is from 1 year or 13 months after the plaintiff's insurance status expired. But there is evidence in those records that relate back to the time from prior to the date the insured status expired. The doctors at the Mayo Clinic in January of 2000, several different doctors, including neurologists, indicated that the plaintiff suffered from chronic pain and that pain was refractory to treatment. Two doctors indicated that his pain was still disabling. And there were several opinions that the abnormalities, which were shown on the MRI testing in January of 2000, showed the same abnormalities as the MRIs from 1996
and 1997. Did the alcohol that he was consuming, the excessive alcohol, exacerbate any of the medications that he was taking?
There's no evidence of that whatsoever on this record, and the ALJ did not make a finding as to that.
Was he drinking alcohol excessively?
There's evidence that at one time he had been drinking alcohol excessively.
And when was that?
But not at the time of the hearing. I believe there's evidence.
Oh, not at the hearing. He didn't come in the hearing drunk. That's not what I said.
No, I didn't mean at the hearing. At the time of the hearing. I didn't mean at the hearing.
But he had a history of it, didn't he?
He did, yes.
And isn't that common knowledge that frequently alcohol exacerbates any drug, and isn't that warning on the drugs?
Your Honor, I don't want to say that it's common knowledge, but there's no evidence.
Is it on the drugs when they're prescribed?
Not to drink alcohol, it may well be, yes. Yeah. But there isn't evidence that at the time, say in 1998, when the plaintiff testified that his pain was so severe and was disabling, there's not evidence that he was drinking heavily at that time. The ALJ also found that there were only some mild bulging discs and some degenerative changes in the plaintiff's spine. However, there are several MRIs which indicate that the plaintiff actually had herniated discs at multiple levels of the spine, his cervical spine, thoracic spine, and the lumbar spine. The ALJ doesn't mention these other MRI reports, and he's required to weigh and analyze the evidence, as this court held in Zarowski. And in several other cases, the ALJ can't just discuss the evidence that supports his findings.
How about the seizures? What did the ALJ find about that?
Well, the ALJ found that at the time of the hearing, he may have been experiencing seizures every 1.5 to 2 weeks. The ALJ found that there was no evidence that he was experiencing seizures prior to the date his insured status expired. But really, the evidence concerning the plaintiff's seizures was exactly the same at the time of the hearing and in December 1998. Actually, there was greater evidence of seizure activity in December 1998 because in October of that year, the plaintiff had undergone an EEG of the brain, which showed that he was suffering from a partial complex seizure disorder. And the plaintiff testified that he was experiencing these petite mal seizures where he would slow down, not understand things, that he was experiencing those every 4 days. The ALJ does not present any reason based on the evidence as to why he rejected that testimony. I'd also just like to mention that an ALJ may not ignore entire lines of evidence. And in this case, the ALJ failed to discuss any of the evidence or testimony that the plaintiff had trouble grasping things and that he would drop objects from his hands. The ALJ didn't find any limitations in bending, although there is significant evidence in the record that the plaintiff suffers from significant limitations in bending and in rotation and movement of the cervical spine as well. The ALJ didn't discuss the evidence that plaintiff suffered from urinary incontinence, which occurred on the average of every week to week and a half, which although that wouldn't be disabling, just by itself, be another symptom that the plaintiff suffered from. The evidence shows that the plaintiff suffers from Osgood-Slaughter disease in the left knee and a moderate spur behind the left knee. The ALJ makes no mention of that condition whatsoever. Because the ALJ ignored those conditions, his decision should be reversed. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Danielle Pedersen, and I'm here on behalf of Joanne Barnhart, the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. Although Mr. Golombewski has charged the ALJ in this case with innumerable errors and omissions, the material evidence in this case fails to bear his allegations out. And furthermore, Mr. Golombewski does not even argue to this court that he was in any way prejudiced or harmed by these alleged errors and omissions.
Well, how about this statement that his testimony should be discredited, and the ALJ will explain that later on, but never does. Now, isn't that a rather difficult thing to put before a court? How are we supposed to evaluate that?
Your Honor, this case is entirely distinguishable from Zaraski, the case that Mr. Golombewski is primarily relying on. This court was concerned in Zaraski because they found that the ALJ made a single conclusory statement that the claimant in that case was not credible. That is simply not the case here. The ALJ in this case provided numerous reasons for his credibility finding. He found that the objective medical evidence did not support the allegations of pain, and that the only relevant physician opinions of record fully supported his RFC. He noted the lack of significant treatment
well,
during...
If he's having seizures once a week, that could be indicate a fairly serious problem, couldn't it?
Your Honor, that would be a fairly serious problem if there was any evidence in the record that that was occurring. Although Mr. Golombewski suggests in his testimony...
Well, did the ALJ say it wasn't occurring, or...
Your Honor, he did say that. He very clearly stated that in his decision, that the record evidence conclusively established that Mr. Golombewski's seizure disorder was well controlled with medication throughout the relevant period of time. And again, I want to stress that in this case, and counsel has obscured this matter, we have a date last insured in this case of December 1998. Although counsel does acknowledge that, the evidence in this case is continuously obscured between that that precedes the date last insured and that that comes well after it. The material evidence in this case, the relevant evidence from 1998, the only time period at issue here, conclusively establishes that Mr. Golombewski's seizure disorder was well controlled with medication. There are repeated comments throughout the record that the seizure disorder was well controlled, although the seizures did change slightly after that 1995 car accident. His treating physicians note first in January of 96 and again in June of 96 that those seizures had ceased completely. The treating physician that saw Mr. Golombewski in 1998, Dr. Person, states in his deposition testimony in the record that when he first saw Mr. Golombewski in June of 1998, he was not aware that Mr. Golombewski had had any seizures for quite some time, and that as far as he knew, this is the treating physician, Mr. Golombewski did not have a single seizure while on medication. This is compelling evidence that is uncontested in the record by anything other than Mr. Golombewski's own statement and those of his wife.
Did the ALJ find that to be the fact or not?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Did the ALJ find what you just said to be the fact?
The ALJ did find that the medical evidence overwhelmingly showed that the seizure disorder was well controlled, yes.
What's well controlled mean? I'm not sure I understand that.
Your Honor, since I am not a medical physician, I cannot comment on what that statement might mean. There were several neurologists, however, in this record, a neurosurgeon and two neurologists that were treating this gentleman, and they all concluded that the seizures were well controlled. And Dr. Person states what he thinks that
what
means.
What does well control mean?
Well, Dr. Person states that
what
in
does
his
it mean to you? It just means well. What
again,
does,
Your
what
Honor,
does something
I, as,
that's well control mean?
Your Honor, in this particular case, I believe it means that he did not have any seizures during the relevant period of time. Dr. Person says
I think that's a logical answer.
Dr. Person conclusively says that. He's the treating physician in this case. He says there were no seizures during the relevant period of time. This is certainly inconsistent with Mr. Golombewski's statement that he was having them at a rate of every
well,
4 days.
Well, there's an awful lot of conflicting evidence about that, isn't there?
There is, Your Honor, and that is the job of the ALJ, is to resolve that conflicting evidence. And he did so in this case, and he gave sufficient reasons for his conclusions. The claimant also makes much of the ALJ's credibility finding and has, again, cited Zaraski for the proposition that this was a single conclusory statement of credibility. That is simply not the case. So again, we want to note that the ALJ discussed also Mr. Golombewski's difficulty with prolonged sitting, standing, and walking. Counsel claims he didn't discuss that, but he did. He does discuss Mr. Golombewski's work history in his decision and finds that, and this is of very great importance, although Mr. Golombewski, who was in his 30s when he alleged total disability, although he originally reported to the agency that he became totally unable to work in 1995, the record conclusively establishes that he performed substantial gainful activity running his own radiator repair business in 1997. And there is even some evidence that he continued to perform that work activity in 1998 and 1999. In fact...
The father had to do the work, I gather, though, isn't that right?
Your Honor, that is not what the father states. The father states that he and his wife had to help out with the business. This by itself has absolutely no probative value on the issue as to whether or not Mr. Golombewski was disabled. Again, we want to point out Mr. Golombewski's own statements to the agency.
I don't understand that. Why does that not have any bearing on whether he's disabled? He had to get his mother and father in there to do the work.
Your Honor, he doesn't...
would seem to indicate something.
Your Honor, he doesn't say he had to get his parents in there to do the work for him. He states that he was unable to get good help. I believe at one point he even indicates that, I think in his own words, that his employees were robbing him blind and that he was having some trouble finding employees. That appears to be the reason why he asked his family to help. I do want to point out on the record, however, that he reported to the agency both in January and in June of 1999 that he was still performing all of the office work, the sedentary office work of that business. That is the exact type of work this ALJ found he could perform. We are not suggesting that Mr. Golombewski could return to his very heavy work as a radiator repairman. We are simply stating that the ALJ reasonably found on this record that Mr. Golombewski could perform a very limited range of sit-down sedentary work that did not require prolonged sitting.
Kind of like an ALJ.
I'm sorry?
I say kind of like an ALJ.
Kind of, exactly, Your Honor.
Did he apply for the job?
I mean, I'm not aware that he did, but perhaps he should.
Pity.
Again, the record in this evidence also shows that although Mr. Golombewski said he was only performing the office work, there's several notations in the record that he was performing heavier work, trying to lift a 400-pound radiator at one point, burning his foot very severely while using a power washer. These are the types of activities that certainly are not indicative of someone who is totally disabled and was not participating at all in the running of his business. The complainant also makes much of the fact that the ALJ did not include some of these other limitations, the bending, the grasping. Again, though, the record during the relevant period of time simply fails to show that there were any such limitations. Not one physician noted that Mr. Golombewski had significant bending limitations. The only relevant opinions in the record showed that he could occasionally bend and stoop, and the VE stated that his jobs that he identified did not require significant bending. The grasping limitation, the evidence of the problems with the hands and the grasping, does not come until 1999, which is outside the relevant period of time here. And I also want to note that Dr. Pearson, who is really the only person who comments on this grip limitation, states that Mr. Golombewski had a normal grip, 5 out of 5 in the right hand, and only minimally reduced grip in the left hand, 4 out of 5, and that when it came to his fine manipulation, it was unimpeded. Those are Dr. Pearson's exact words on that report. Mr. Golombewski again wants to point to the MRI evidence to show that he had these grasping limitations, but again, there are no reported symptoms of hand weakness or hand limitations before the December 1998 date last insured. The ALJ's decision in this case is simply distinguishable in all ways from the ALJ's decision in the Zaraski case and similar cases like Schroeder, where this court remanded for a more thorough credibility decision. The ALJ's gave numerous reasons for his credibility finding, including factors that weighed in favor of Mr. Golombewski, like his difficulties with prolonged sitting and standing, and the precipitating and aggravating factors of his pain. The relevant evidence in this case, however, the evidence that bears on Mr. Golombewski's condition as of December 1998, provides substantial support for the ALJ's decision, and we therefore respectfully request that this court affirm that decision and find in favor of the commissioner.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honors, the written statements in the file from the plaintiff's wife and his parents indicate that they were putting in approximately 60 hours a week helping Mr. Golombewski at his workplace, and that's very significant, I believe. The ALJ doesn't discuss the problems in grasping or the problems in bending, and it's his job to do that. As we point out in the reply brief, there is evidence from 1997 of limitations in both of those areas, and although the government says that, well, this first evidence comes up in 1999, it was January 14th of 1999, which is 14 days after the insured status expired, and the evidence doesn't indicate that the problem began on that day, but actually began a year and a half earlier, at least. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We will...